Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you my interview with Larson Hicks, husband, father, entrepreneur, business owner, and elder in a local church of my hometown of Huntsville, Alabama. Larson shares hard learned lessons and wisdom that he and his family faced as they endured tragedy, relocated across the country, and planted a church and grew a business. Specifically, a lot of wisdom for those of you that are feeling that community is missing where you are and not really sure whether you should plant a church or relocate to somewhere that already has a thriving community. Larson shed some light on how he would go about making those decisions. Before I get to the interview, I'd like to go ahead and announce those of you that haven't been following along on social media, I'm going to be taking part in Will Spencer of the Renaissance of Men's Digital Summit, What Men Need to Know. I'll be speaking alongside five other talented men in addition to Will on a variety of subjects. Will has asked me to speak on courage. I'll be opening up the panel on Saturday, March 25th. I have posted the Eventbrite in the show notes for those of you all that want to register for that. You can get a discount if you use the code Spearing, my last name, S-P-E-A-R-I-N-G, and enjoy hearing from other speakers. We got discussion on boldness, determination, resilience, self-mastery, and there'll be some questions and answers as the final session lasting all day, March 25th. Be sure to check out the Eventbrite. And without further ado, let's get to the interview. Thanks for being here with us today. And
hey, it's good to be here.
Go ahead and cue the listener in on the wave tops of Larson Hicks's life to date before we go deep. I'm sure you're a podcaster, and so you're used to giving the elevator pitch on who you are and kind of where. The way that I heard it was you're supposed to be coming to North Carolina.
And oh, yeah. Oh, that's true. That was true.
My hometown, our mutual friend Gene actually texted me yesterday. He was like, we got to link up. So if you would been made it the whole way, you would have been able to hang out with us here in Southern Pines.
That's too bad. That's hard to hear. Yeah, man. We were on our way to North Carolina. That was the game plan for sure. And that's a fun part of the story of kind of our journey. But yeah, we live here in Huntsville, Alabama. We've been here for 8 years now. We got here. My wife and I are both from El Paso, Texas, and we came to Huntsville via Moscow, Idaho. So we did 12 years up in Idaho. I went to New St. Andrews College and stayed and started our family there, and we're there for like I said, 12 years. And yeah, I was kind of ready for, I mean, the two big reasons we left were one, I was eager to lead, you know, and to kind of spread my wings and kind of make my mark. And I felt like, Moscow was such a wonderful, delightful place to live, but I felt like it was kind of an incubator. It was like, I'm just getting fat, you know, like I need to get out there and scrap it out a little bit. And like there's this sense I always had that like for anything that needs doing in the church community, especially, there are at least 200 men at this church who are more capable, more qualified than I am, you know? And so, that was like not an understatement. Like that was totally true. And so it was kind of like, you know, if you're a young man who's like eager to serve and to lead and to grow into, you know, greater leadership, you're like, I didn't feel like I had a lot of opportunities there. So that was one piece of it. But
I feel like that probably in the spread your wings aspect of that too, is those guys are older men in a lot of ways too, that just it's experience and wisdom that comes from experience, going through those experiences, relying on the Lord to grow you. So, and you just can't catch a guy that's on fire for the Lord, age 55, you know, you don't take the reins from that guy. You learn from him,
totally.
But totally, you're not going to catch a guy that's full of the Spirit and getting after it.
That's right.
You know, you're going to catch a guy that's lazy and kind of, I've arrived. Listen here, bub. This is how it goes down. Right. Or the old school boomers. But that's not the population up there as much as it is everywhere else.
Yeah, it was just a wonderful place where we just drunk it in and just learned and grew and thrived and got to see what a healthy church dealing with crazy barrage of internal, external, just you name it. They had so many crazy stuff, you know, so many crazy things happen to people that we knew very closely. I mean, there were good friends that were impacted by a lot of these crazy things that the church went through, and we went through a lot. We lost a son while we were living there, and we got to see a church rally around a family who's lost a child in a way that was life-changing for us and profound. You know, anyway, I could go into so many different stories, but our time there was so rich, informative, transformative, and we and so we were full, and it wasn't, you know, there was not a shred of like, we got to get out of here at all. It was really, I got to a point in my career where I had sort of, you know, I had started at this company in customer service while I was finishing my college, and then I got into sales, and then I got this opportunity to be the first ever product manager at the software company. They never had anybody in that title. I didn't know what that meant. I just read some books, and a mentor said, "Hey, you should try this. Like, we should pitch this to their boss." And they're like, "Sure, we'll make you a product manager." And I took over this product and was able to grow it like a lot, you know, in the course of a year and a half or so. And it was like, "Oh, I love this. I think I'm good at this." And then I kind of got to a point to where I felt like there wasn't much of an opportunity for me to go any further at that particular company. I didn't feel like I was making as big an impact as I could be. And so I was just hungry. And my wife and I just kind of always said, like, whenever we get to a place to where we're not being stretched, we're not growing, we're not, learning, it's time to move on. You know, like as a young dad at that point with a bunch of kids, there was no room for me to like coast and just ride it out. Like, there was no room for me to go, "Dude, I'm making more money than most of my friends. I got a secure gig that's easy. I should just chill," you know? That was the temptation. And that was the opportunity. But for me, it was like, that's not being a good steward of the talents that God's given me. And I need to keep pushing and growing. And frankly, my life's only getting more expensive. You know, we continue to have kids, and they continue to get bigger. They're all headed to college someday, probably. And so we gotta be prepared for all this stuff. My stock has got to go up. Like, I can't stop here. So I told my wife, "Hey, I think it's time for me to quit." And we had this conversation a bunch of times, but I was like, "I think it's time." We talked about it. We prayed about it. We agreed. Yep, I think that's right. And I remember the morning we drove our kids together to school, and then she dropped me off at work, and we prayed in the car, you know, we prayed about it one more time. And then when I was getting out, she's like, "But you're not quitting today, right?" I was like, no, I'm not quitting today. Like, that'll happen. And that'll probably happen in a few weeks or a month or so. And then I walked in, and it just happened to be that my boss walked up to me that morning and said, "Hey, could we talk?" I was like, "Sure." And he pulled me into his office. He's like, "How are things going?" I was like, "You know, I don't know." And he's like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't really, it was just like, I had just made the decision, you know, and I was like in that headspace." He's like, "Wait, are you saying you're not
in the program?
Are you saying you're not happy here?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't think I am." He's like, "Are you quitting?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm quitting." He was like, "Wait." So anyway, it was like, but anyway, it was just cool that I had a wife who was like, "Let's do it. You know, we're not getting we're not getting any younger. Like, if we're going to take risks, we got to take them now. So let's go." So quit, tried to start a few businesses, failed. Found my way into some just sort of corporate hustling, contract work and consulting. Anyway, decided that that was the direction I was going to go with my career, doing kind of consulting for startups and helping people start businesses. And that's sort of what led us to what we thought we were heading out to the Triangle, to jump into that community, into that startup scene. And God sort of intercepted us here in Huntsville. We stopped here for what we thought was going to be like maybe a month, kind of as a pit stop with some family, and got roped into this church and then a job. And so, yeah, the rest is kind of history. We've been here for 8 years, planted a church 2 years ago. That's taken off. We're at like 315 members now, and probably more than that on Sunday mornings, but that's the membership.
I worship with y'all. It's nice to have a CREC church in my hometown.
Buddy.
My parents are still there, so it's fun to.
Was I in town that morning, or was I out of town?
I'm trying. You were up front and
nice.
And that was same week that your associate pastor started, but wasn't preaching. I think he just had just moved down there. You guys had a fellowship meal. You guys met fellowship meal every Sunday, right?
We had a fellowship meal every Sunday for our first couple of years, like our first year and a half. And then size and just logistics made it to where we needed to bump it down to once a month. So we do once a month, but we have, our church is divided into five, maybe it's six. I think it's five parishes. Mm-hmm. And those parishes are all organizing their own kind of fellowship events, throughout the month. And so, there's one big church thing every month. And then it's a pretty active church. So there's lots of stuff going on, lots of opportunities to be in community with people.
And you guys got people driving down from Chattanooga.
We got a couple of families in Chattanooga. One is interested in planting a church out there, and that's been kind of the goal, long-term for them. And we're thrilled to, this is part of our story is like, it's really hard to lead without a vision, right? Without a vision, the people perish. You know this, you probably preach this all day, every day. Yep. So many church planters, and I've talked to them, this is part of our direct story. I was going to try to get involved with a guy who's going to plant a church in Huntsville. And when I asked him like, hey, give me your vision. Like, what are we doing? It was like, I know what it isn't, but I don't know what it is. Mm. And I'm like, okay, like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I can tell you about all the things I don't want it to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. I was like, well, that's a terrible vision. That's awful. Like nobody, like how do you lead people when it's like, okay, everybody, we're not going all these different places. Like we're going somewhere, but I don't know where. It's like, that's not leadership, So for us, we didn't realize this when we were in Moscow, but that was God preparing us, giving us a vision for what a healthy, vibrant church community looks like, And so when that opportunity happened, and by the way, I mean, we, after like 6 years in Huntsville, we decided we've plowed hard here. And we have not found community. We haven't found a solid church. We've tried. I mean, we were members of two different churches and we threw ourselves into it, threw everything we had into it and really just were really discouraged that we could not. And I was doing these beer and hymns events every month for years. I brought in speakers and organized events. Like I was actively trying to get, find our people.
You weren't that family that came in 5 minutes late to Sunday service and like raced to the car when the last hymn and then 6 months later is like, how come nobody's had us over for dinner once? And we, not ever come to a prayer meeting. You're supposed to chase me down and make me join your stuff. That's how I get the best out of this church.
That's right. So, I mean, we were plowing and it just wasn't happening. And so Bethany and I were like, look, we just realized you know, our older boys grew up in this lovely community and share our vision of what being a Christian means, you know. Mm-hmm. They have the same trajectory, we think, that we do. Like, we're heading in the same direction, but we have this younger crop of kids that we feel like are growing up in this church environment that is not at all the direction that we're trying to launch our kids. And so we just said, look, this isn't like a nice to have. This is a necessary piece of infrastructure for the Hicks family. And Amen. We've done our diligence here to try to make that happen. It hasn't happened. And so Bethany and I committed to each other, we're going to give it 6 months. We have no business planting a church. I don't know what planting a church means or how that's supposed to happen. I haven't taken a class or anything. We just said, the only thing we haven't tried is to plant a church. Let's give that a legitimate college try for 6 months. And if God doesn't bless it, if we get 6 months from now, we put the day on the calendar. On that day, we're going to have a conversation. And if it's clear that the Lord's not blessing this, doors aren't opening, then we're not going to be delusional about it. We're going mm-hmm. to take that as God saying no. And obviously, we're going to be praying that he does bless it. But we're going to hear his no if he gives us a no. And we're going to leave, you know. And we were going to go to North Carolina. We're going to go to Texas where my family is because they've got a great church. Or we're going to go back to Moscow. I mean, it was one of those options. And of course,
what was God that date? What was the date that you planted officially? And then the 6 month, you know, rough plus or minus month and year.
Yeah.
I'm thinking end of 2020, right? Like,
well, actually, it was like summer of 2019 when we kind of made this like, okay, we're doing this. And mm-hmm. so we spent 6 months meeting with, you know, God just kept bringing guys. Like, I mean, and this is the thing. It's like, I love hearing people talk about church planting because it's mostly just hilarious, because it's like, it's just funny to even pretend like there's like a process. I mean, there are obviously, you can tell your story and glean wisdom and glean some ideas, but generally it's like your church plant, like if you're just trying to do like the mega church thing, then yes, there is a roadmap for that. Like,
yeah, because that's totally a business plan, not a that's business. Church plan.
Yeah. Right. Right. So yes, now, there's
marketing,
a plan.
Let's see how many people we can get in. We can convert that's this right. many, you know,
do the demographic
blah, blah, blah.
Studies, all that yeah. stuff. Right. But if you're trying to plant a faithful, God-fearing church, God's going to have to bless it. You know, like mm-hmm. God's going to have to pull it together. And if he doesn't, it's not happening. And so for us, it's like, I can just look at the whole story and go, I didn't know this guy was going to turn up, and I didn't know this guy was going to turn up, and I didn't know that this guy was going to have these gifts, but they all showed up, you know, at the time when we were praying for God to open doors and bless this thing. And so, yeah, we met, me and a group of guys, for several months. It was, I think it was, let me think about this. We hadn't committed to the CREC. We were still, I mean, this is how I was pretty wide open. Like, maybe we're going to, you know, we're going to do this in a different way. I don't know. And so we had some worship services that nobody came to, but we had a bunch of parties and events that tons of people came to. And it was like, okay, this is weird. Like, there's people who want to be on our list, but nobody's coming to worship. We were doing it on Sunday night. That was end of 2019. And then early 2020, I think in February, I got a call from Rich Lusk, and he was like, hey man, I've heard rumors that you're like doing something down there, and I'm curious, are you going to do it in the Series C? And I was like, we've been thinking about it. I don't know. And he said, well, if you guys want to go Series C, like, we'd love to sponsor you. And I was like, oh, cool. So we did that. So it was like February of 2020 when we were like officially, that was like kind of the start date. Like, this is actually a thing now. We have like a steering committee. We have a church that's sponsoring us. Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of, well, what's next? You know, like, how's this going to happen? And by then we did feel like this is clear that God's bringing people together and making things happen. We just don't know how it's all going to play out. And then COVID happened. And,
how many families were you at February mark? The, what was the number?
So February we had a steering committee, comprised of Jason Cherry, who's one of our elders, and he preaches. I think Matt Carpenter who's now a full-time pastor at our church. Matt had been a pastor in the CRC in Idaho and had just moved back to Alabama. Matt was on our steering committee, and he was like, I'm not going to be a part of this church. I'm just here to advise. And then David Francis, who's one of our ruling elders now, had come out of, he'd been a Baptist. He'd been a deacon in the Baptist church, in a Reformed Baptist church, and then was kind of a leader, a community, you know, small group leader at an Acts 29 church. So there's three of us plus us. So there's four that were part of the
steering
committee.
Four men, and that doing the rough math, that's like 43 children. Probably.
Yeah. About. Something like that. Yeah. No, not that many, but a good number of children, for sure. So there's four of us. And frankly, I can't even say that both Jason and Matt live kind of the next town over. So they were like, look, I at that time thought we were planting in South Huntsville. And they're like, we're probably not gonna be a part of a South Huntsville church. Like, we want to help you. And because I was trying to do something in our neighborhood. Right. And it just was clear to me at that point, like God's like, I'm jumping ahead, but ultimately it became clear that my idea that it was South Huntsville was not God's idea, that it seemed like God was bringing us people. We were praying for God to bring us leaders. He brought us leaders. They don't live in South Huntsville. So this church is in the wrong spot. So we decided to set it up in a more central spot, which probably frankly was probably also, you know, a good thing for the church in those early years. So COVID happens. We're still members at our PCA church, and they'd stopped meeting and for COVID. So we're like doing the video church thing on Sundays. And one of our neighbors who was on our mailing list for our
beer thing,
church plant thing. Right. Oh, yeah. And was also, yeah, this guy, like I used to do, I call it prayer and pancakes. I do like book studies on my back porch. And he's a neighbor who'd come to my book studies. So they're walking by our house, or actually my wife and his wife are going for a walk on a Thursday morning. And she goes, what are you guys doing for church? Everyone, no one's meeting. And she goes, yeah, we're tuning in online. What about you guys? Like, yeah, we're tuning in online too. And they're like, we're just tired of this. Do you guys want to like, could we worship together on Sunday morning, you know? And Bethany was like, actually, yeah. I mean, she's like, 'cause aren't you guys planting a church? She's like, yeah, we are. Yeah, let's do that. Why don't you guys come over and we'll call it the church. Let's make it a worship service. And so I called the guys. I'm like, hey, get the band together. Like, we're doing this, you know? And so that family was at my house backyard, you know, I'm looking out my window where we set up, our house backyard Sunday morning, we're going to do a worship service. Get your sermon prepared. And that one family, just through spreading the news, and we just sent out the email saying to the list going, hey, if you guys want to come worship, we're going to be worshiping. And we had 9 families show up the first Sunday in our backyard.
And what date was that? That was February?
That was I think it was April. I think it was April of 2020. I think April. And so we proceeded to meet every week. Every week it got bigger. Within 6 weeks, we were like 16 families or 15 families or something. And we were like, man, I think this thing's happening. And so anyway, so that's kind of how that thing, we called it COVID church. We actually, like, I don't know if you know the symbol of a ball and cross. It's on a lot of steeples. So you'll see it's like golden. It's a ball and then it's got a cross coming off of it. And it's supposed to represent Christ's lordship over the world, over the planet, right? The ball and cross. So we had the family that had said, hey, let's do this thing. He's actually a designer. So I said, hey, could you create a ball and cross, but the ball is a COVID virus? And so he's like, yes. And so we made this COVID virus.
I will do that for you for free.
Yes. Yes. So that became our, we called it COVID church for those couple of months that we met, or weeks really. It was like 6 or 7 weeks that we met. But that was on our programs, was the COVID ball and cross.
Heck yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, that's the story of the church. I apologize. Every time I try to like give the summary, I dive into the details. So,
oh, that's fine. It's the two things that kind of from the beginning, you know, you talked about being there 14 years and talked about a couple of things, and I would love to hear how you found your wife, a little bit about that story. I think I'm seeing a lot of need for dating and relationship advice in the landscape these days. So just, it doesn't, there you is. Know, 2 to 3 minutes about how you went through that, how the authority worked with, you know, the,
for sure.
her dad, family, like, what are the dynamics there?
Happy to. Yeah. And I've got my brother, my little brother, I call, he's little, cause just by age, he's a beast. He's a Marine. So he could kick my butt. But I'll
hold my tongue about Marines. Just, but I have to announce I'm holding my tongue about Marines.
Yeah. Yeah. Roger that. Drew and I recorded like a 2-hour podcast on my own, just kind of personal channel, about dating and courtship. Cause we both have pretty, very different stories, very different experiences. But obviously we agree 100% on the biblical principles. So just talking about that, but yeah, so
I'll definitely link that in the show notes. Note to get that from you. So they can dive into that if they want to.
Yeah, for sure. And like, this is stuff that, you know, I'm not trying to plug everything, but I'll just mention, Rich and I have a podcast together called God a Minute, and we're talking about just theology and philosophy and all kinds of fun stuff, but we always tend to come back to gender stuff. And it's actually, our last episode was on Genesis 3 and how everything is in Genesis 3. Mm-hmm. And I've become more and more convicted and come to the realization that the first sins, you know, like the fall is a failure of gender roles. It, like, Eve is the first feminist, Adam is the first passive man. Mm-hmm. And when we fell in very gender specific ways. Like, it wasn't just sin, you know, it was
the hierarchy failed up the chain. You know,
yeah, absolutely. But
each within their own realm failed.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So anyway, I digress. But that's stuff that I just say it to say, you know, me and Rich love talking about the stuff we talk about all the time. And we've talked a bit about courtship and stuff too. So my wife, it's kind of funny. I was at public school. She was at public school. I'm one of five. I was the only of the five kids who wasn't like a problem. Like, my most of my siblings were getting into lots of trouble. They've all turned out tremendously very successful. Between the five of us, we have 30 kids. So, like, it's glorious. God's redeemed all of our foolishness and all of our early years. So I happened to be this kid. I was at a Christian school that I thought was full of people who weren't Christians. And I told my parents, like, I don't think it's good for me to be here. I'd be better for me to be in public school than it would be for me to be here. All these kids are doing drugs and partying and like, I might as well just be at public school and I can be at least be salt and light. And I was like, I was ready for that. I wanted that. And so
how old were you then?
I went to public. I was probably 16.
Okay. Yeah.
So I showed up to this public school with long hair and I wore a huge cross on my, you know, on my neck. And I went around and was friends with everybody in the school and became the president of the Christian club on campus. And so it was like, that was my thing, you know, I mean, among other things, that was one of my things. And so, we would have these Bible studies at my house when I was a kid that my mom would teach. These years in high school were like 60 kids would show up and my mom would just teach, like, line by line, she'd teach through a book of the Bible, you know, and these 60 teenagers would just sit there and listen. And I'd play guitar, you know, and sing worship songs. So Bethany was, I mean, just the far and away the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen. I see her in my class. She's in one of my classes. And day one, I was like, that girl, that's the one. And just hard, full court press from day one.
What age was that?
And I was 16. She had not yet turned 15, so she was 14. Okay. So she's 14, almost 15. She's in a junior level class. She's a sophomore.
Yeah.
Because she skipped a grade because she's smart and she wanted to. Anyway,
I was just asking that because I saw my wife when I was 17. She was 16, and I was like, "That's the one.
That's it."
And I went like, "That was it."
For
a while.
Yeah. Same exact deal.
I'm going to get married. So,
and so she was raised Catholic. And so I'm a Baptist at this point. And I'm like, I'm not going to date her if she's not a Christian. Right.
This gets very interesting.
Right. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm not going to date her if she's not a Christian. So it's hilarious because my wife saved all of our notes. You know, you'd write notes to each other in class, right? Mm-hmm. And pass them to each other in the halls. She saved all of them. And going back through them and reading them, it's hilarious because like every single letter leading up until the time we actually started dating, I'm asking in one form or another, I know you say you pray, but have you accepted Jesus Christ into your heart as your personal Lord and Savior?
Like, I'm a great Baptist at this point.
Yeah, right.
Proof
right,
on paper. Exactly.
Yes, exactly. So I'm doing the like conversionism thing, you know? And she's like, I don't know what you mean. Like, I don't know. I go to church when my parents take us. Mm-hmm. So that's right. That's right. So we have like an evangelical once a month thing at our Christian club where we present the gospel and we hand out cards and people can check the box if they prayed the prayer. Mm. And one week she started coming to them because I was pursuing her really hard and she was following me around and hanging out with me a lot. And she came one Friday and afterwards I look at the cards and she had checked the box and I was like, she's saved. Let's go. You know, it's on, you know, like,
praise the make Lord. Them the girlfriend.
Yeah, that's right. So shortly after that, we started dating. That was in 1999. So we started dating in October or November of 1999. And then I went to a church camp where, they were teaching about, you know, this Josh Harris book about kissing, dating goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like a leader at my church. You know, I can't remember when this is exactly in the whole, well, I think I'm still at school. So I was like, man, I've got a responsibility to this group, you know, to like be an example and we're learning this. And I think it looks like it's legit and true. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Bethany. I was like, hey, I'm sorry, but you know, I don't think we should be boyfriend and girlfriend anymore. You know, mm-hmm. And she's like, what's that mean? I'm like, well, I don't know, but I just know that I can't like, you can't be my girlfriend.
And so, I use that term because it immediately leads to out of wedlock birth. And,
that's right. That's right.
You know,
that's right. Yes. And she, and listen, I mean, you know, God's so gracious. I mean, Bethany was very unprotected. Her mm-hmm. parents were divorced. She lived with her mom. Her dad was out of town. And so, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for us to get into trouble. We, by God's grace, you know, were able to make it to marriage, intact, but it was God's grace. But she, but somewhere in there, like maybe it was probably 6 months into this whole, you're not my girlfriend, but I'm going to pound any dude that even looks at you the wrong mm-hmm. way. Like, we're in this weird mode where she had like abandoned all of her friends her whole life and had become a part of our church and our family basically. But we were trying to like not be boyfriend and girlfriend. And so somewhere in there, I was working at Popeye's Chicken and I'm like washing, scrubbing dishes. And I'm like, I hate this. I just hate this. Like that girl is my girl. Like I'm going to marry her. And so,
you don't
like,
hate the dishes at Popeyes. You hate the relational ambiguity.
It was the relational thing. It was bearing down on me. So I called her after that shift. I was like, look, Bethany, I don't know what to call it, but I'm going to tell you this. I am going to marry you someday. So whatever mm-hmm. you want to call that, that's what it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm in.
And she's like, yeah, she's like, okay. So I went off
what,
to
what age? This is senior year.
So this is still, I'm probably 17 at this point or something, you know, I mean, it was, so I'm still pretty young, but I know that she's the girl and she's, by then I knew her character. I knew that she was a great woman. And that we were a good fit, you know, for each other. So I was locked and loaded. Did Youth with a Mission, so that took me away from El Paso for a season. And then I ended up, it's a long story. This is a long story too, but I ended up in Idaho. My pastor at my little Baptist church basically bought me a ticket and said, let's go check out the school in Idaho. And so I'm like, hey, I'm up for an adventure, and ended up in Idaho. And, Bethany's like, this is probably the end of our relationship. You know, you're going to be all the way on the other side of the planet. And she was hoping to go to school in Florida. So even worse. But I basically spent that whole freshman year calling her dad, who I'd only met a couple of times. But he's a good man, great man. He's an Army guy, former Army guy. He lives here in Huntsville. So we'd only met a handful of times, but I spent that whole year calling him probably once a week and just getting to know him and explaining to him what my intentions were with his daughter and trying to get his blessing to let me marry her. And and he had no framework for any of this. He was just like, as he saw that this wasn't going to stop, that Larson's going to keep persisting on this, it got to where he was like, okay, well, what if she just transfers up to college up there and you guys, she can live up there. And, you know, if you guys end up, like whatever, maybe you don't have to get married. I'm like, no, that's not a good idea. I don't want to do that. I don't think she wants to do that either. And so we just, we had this conversation, and eventually, very tentatively, he was like, all right, you've got my permission. You can propose to her this summer and marry her next summer. I was like, all right, I can do that. So especially if like she's in Texas and I'm in Idaho, I can probably handle a long distance thing. So that's what happened. So I proposed to her the summer after my freshman year, and we got married the summer after my sophomore year. And
you
didn't
want
his condition
to move up there as a student where you guys weren't married. Like if she moves here, we're going to be married. And
we knew that that was not a good idea. That without supervision and, we were just like, we were ready to be married and it was going to be impossible for us to go a year without breaking down, sexually. So that was like, so that was the right thing, and it was great. She got to prepare for it, gave her dad, her family a chance to really prepare themselves for it. And I promised her dad I'd get her through college. That was really the biggest thing. He's like, I want her to finish college and get her degree. And so she had our first son the summer after her junior year, and then had our second son the summer after her senior year. So she kept going. And
she was at NSA as well up there, or was
no, she went to, she went to Washington State actually. Oh, okay. So she was a fashion design major, and they had a good program at Washington State. So we lived over there to get residency, so we could get in-state tuition.
Nice.
Delivered papers in the morning. Yeah, every morning, 7 days a week, 4 a.m. Delivered papers, and then I drove out to a little factory out in Troy, Idaho, and made these silicone heating blankets. And then she went to school. And then I drove to the hospital in Moscow and worked an evening shift and at the admitting desk. And we made it work, man. Rugby
you
practice.
You were in school during that?
I took some time off of school. Yeah, I took some time off of school to get her through. We didn't have any money. I was – my dad – and actually, I'm probably going to do this with my sons. When I started college, my dad just said – he's like – and I'm the fourth son, fourth kid. So by this time, he had kind of been through this with other kids and seen different things work and not work. And he was like, here's a check. Like, this is all of the money I'm giving you for college. This is all the money I have for you. And it was a – I think it was like $20,000, which was a ton of money at that time. And he was like, I don't know how long that'll last you, but that's all you're getting. So he was like, I'd prefer you not work your freshman year. And I was like, fair enough. So I didn't work most of my freshman year. I think somewhere in there, I was like, Dad, I need to work. This isn't going to last me long enough. I burned through that money before I think I even got married. So when we got married, I was working at the ale house in Moscow, as a cook. So there was not like a ton of money coming in or anything. So I just needed to hustle so I could get my wife through college and pay the bills, and support this growing family, because we had kids immediately.
Yeah, well, you're getting a return on investment. I mean,
yeah,
the family's growing, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's that's right, for sure.
So yeah, so that's,
and you went back to school.
Yeah, and then I went back and kind of piecemeal, you know, this is a common thing at New St. Andrews, but people get behind on languages, because languages, it's like everything else you can sort of grope your way through without something about languages. There's just no shortcut to the languages. Like I can write a paper and get a D on it or a C on it. And that's good enough. But with the languages, it's like, if you don't just do the work and just drill and put in the hours, like it's pretty hard. So I was one of these guys who just had gotten behind on languages. And so I had a couple of years where I was just doing Greek and Latin. So yeah. So did that while I was working. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of late nights where my wife was like, I want to go to sleep, but I want you to get your work done more, because I want you to be done with school. And so I'm going to brew a pot of coffee and I'm going to sit here, you know, next to you while you get your work done, you know? So yeah, lots of that kind of stuff. But it was nice. good years, man. Sweet memories.
The next thing that you said is, you know, quitting, secure job, doing an honest assessment that you weren't pushing yourself anymore. I think that's super pertinent in America today. Our pastor's doing Sunday school about, you know, church culture, and saying the American dream has swallowed up the church is kind of what he's saying. And that is just, I can't stand it, man. Like, and that's a lot of the interactions I have around the podcast and stuff. It's like, dude, quit working for somebody else that is not aligned with your, like, you're building and creating value for something that's hostile to our way of life. Yeah. And the comfort level is they're scared of reducing personal overhead. And also, I think for guys, and I talked with Dr. Merkel on this podcast, said guys just don't realize that they can do more work. You know, they think that they're working so hard because they're working 37 hours a week, you know, and you're not doing an honest assessment of what you can put out as far as output. And then as well, you're not seeing God work. So, I mean, with that little bit of layup, talk through some of those dynamics that how you saw God work, you had failure. It wasn't just waltz right into things, and then where it kind of professionally, how you're, because you're not a paid pastoral staff guy. And you're working too. Like these other, we haven't really even talked about vocation much.
Yeah. So today, so just to start at the end and then we can start back at the beginning, but today I'm the CEO of a physician staffing company, and we're not huge. I've got like 15 employees, and we've got a couple hundred doctors working all over the country. But that's what I do for a living today. But sort of going back to that time, I was, you know, the thing that I landed my job at IMSI because at that time I had three other jobs. I think the three that I mentioned to you were the three jobs I had immediately before I got the job at the software company. But the reason I got the job was Gabe Wrench sent out a church email saying he was working at IMSI, but he also had a side business doing construction. And he sent out a church email saying,
he doesn't have side businesses.
Right. I know. Right. That's all Gabe is. Gabe's side hustle wrench.
Yeah.
So Gabe, sends a church email out saying, hey, I've got this demo project this weekend and I don't have any help if somebody's available. And I was available. It was a Saturday and I'm broke as a joke and always looking to make a little extra money. And I think that Saturday my wife had something going on. So it was like, why not? So I showed up at Gabe's at this job site where we were just taking sledgehammers to concrete and loading wheelbarrows, you know, and just manual labor, you know? And, as we're talking over the day, he's like, what do you do for work? And I'm like, well, I do this paper route and I also work at this factory. I also work at the hospital. And I've started this Christian men's rugby team. And he's like, dang, dude, you're doing a lot of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, whatever. And so he went back to work on Monday. I was like, hey, you guys should hire this guy. And so I got a call from Andrew Crappy Shots. I was like, hey, you want to come work at MZ? And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's like, well, I'll pay you as much as all of those other jobs, and you can quit them all. And I'm like, that sounds pretty awesome. And he's like, and I'm cool with you continuing your finishing your degree. And I'm like, all right, that sounds like a plan. Let's do it. So it was like,
that
it was
Andrew
the first time
you ran into when you walked into, like, was that the, or is it some, when, somebody else when you quit?
When was that?
When you walked in and were like, I'm not going to quit today, babe. It was another
guy. That was a different, I was, so I reported to at my last like job at MZ, I was reporting directly to Andrew, and then MZ was bought by Career Builder, and Career Builder told Andrew he had too many direct reports. And so he was like, you need to like trim this down. And so I ended up reporting to another guy. And, and so that was kind of that was a few months before I ended up quitting. Cause I just didn't, anyway, I wasn't pumped about things.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I ended up working there for 8 years, 7.5, 8 years, and had a blast. It was a great job. Yeah, I mentioned it already. You know, I will tip the hat to Rod Ulps. If you haven't had him on the show, you should. He was a naval aviator, Ligonier. He's successfully launched some amazing children. Rusty is a entrepreneur, wonderful father, and an elder at a church. And he's done a great job. And Rod became a mentor for me. And his one of his central things that he teaches men is this idea of the seasons of a man's life. Mm-hmm. And the quick sketch is like, as you get older as a man, your responsibility levels are growing, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting more and more responsible in your job, in your church, in your family. You've got a mortgage, you've got all kinds of stuff, right? So it's responsibility is doing this. At the same time, as you are getting older as a man, your energy levels are doing this. Like, so you're getting older, your testosterone's dropping. Like you things are happening physiologically that are making you have less energy. Right. And at some point those two lines cross. And he said, as an aviator, they call that being behind the power curve. And that's when you crash your F-14 into the back of a aircraft carrier. You know, that's, you don't want to be there. And so he sort of takes that framework of energy and responsibility and kind of plots out these different points in a man's life. And basically
you have to have 10,000 slaves by the time you're 80. So you can keep up with responsibility.
That's right.
But
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, the way that like that point where those two lines cross is basically when most men go through a midlife crisis. That's the point where most men, that's the point where they
keep up with what I used to be able to just grit through and get it done.
Yeah. And his point is that up until that point, you need to invest those years leading up to that point. You've got to invest those years in taking risks in order to discover what it is you're good at, and what it is you're bad at, and either get better at those things or stop doing those things, right? And if you do that, you're going to find yourself when you get to that point where you can't just grit it out anymore, right? Because you just don't have the energy and there's too much responsibility. If you haven't discovered kind of your calling and kind of your power band, like the stuff that you're good at, and B, if you haven't invested heavily in those years in your wife and your marriage, you're going to get to that point and you're going to crash. Like you're going to go, I only know how to be a customer service representative. That's all I've ever done. Like, and I'm can't trapped. Do anything else now. I'm trapped. And mm-hmm. I don't even know that I like this job. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, this happens. I talk to doctors all day. I have doctors. I mean, doctors burn out harder and more frequently than almost any profession out there. These guys put hundreds of thousands of dollars into this career, and they find themselves in the exact same position going, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't like this, and I'm trapped. I don't know how to do anything else. They think mm-hmm. they don't know how to do anything else. And I've got this lifestyle and I've got these responsibilities, and what do I do? And so that's when like the divorce happens. That's when the mistress happens. That's when the get the Porsche and abandon your family and grow your hair out long and, you know, start, you know, go whatever. Right. I mean, there's bad things happen.
You yank on the responsibility lever, in desperation. You don't understand what to do with the energy side of it because you haven't put your energies in the right spot.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. That's so good.
Right.
That's exactly why I left the military at almost 14 years because I was like, I see four, you know, literally this month will be 20 years if I had stayed in. But I've built a couple businesses now since getting out six and some change years ago. Yeah. And I love what I do, you know,
and
the earning potential eclipses a pension.
Yeah.
Getting
for sure.
after it. And so I've never heard it obviously phrased with that framework, but it's when I listen to that, it's like, thank goodness. Yeah. When I was 33, I was like, I don't think this is it. It doesn't mean, you know, any of the guys listening to this too, like, it's not like, oh, you blew your shot either. Cause that's the reality is God can bring a yield that is he does that. It's you taking the risk, and that's what you get in entrepreneurship. I think you take that risk.
That's right.
It's either poverty and you crash and you have no money because that's what you need. God needs to sanctify you that way. Or he says, no, I'm going to bless it because you have faith and we're doing this, you know?
Totally. Yeah. You learn dependence on the Lord and on the wife that he's given you, on your faith. I mean, so I can tell you a personal, you know, so I think it's 2009. We look at 2009 as the worst year of our lives. And it was like, it was the year that my parents divorced. It was the year that our dog died. It was the year that, that our son died. there were other things I can't even talk about, but there were lots of things that happened in that year that were just, awful. And I remember, and this is the other thing you have to be investing in is your faith and your church. So I remember the day, and it had just been so many things, and we were just fragile because God had just been crushing us, you know, just so many heavy, hard things. And I get a call that the dog my wife and I bought are, you know, right when we got married and we thought of as like, you know, it was a really special dog, right? Mm-hmm. And that I had sent to live with my mom in Texas, that dog had to be put down. And mm-hmm. we love that pooch, right? But you know, in the abstract, it's like, whatever, it's just a dog. But it was like a dog on top of all of these other things. And it had just been such a terrible, hard year. And I remember I came home and was like, babe, the dog had to be put down. And mm-hmm. The only thing I knew to do was get on my knees. I said, Beth, let's get on our knees with our boys who are like in diapers and let's sing the Psalms. And we just sang. We just sang the Psalms on our knees in our living room. And I remember telling my wife, I always thought that I came to Moscow, Idaho, and New St. Andrews so that I could learn how to crush an atheist. Like I was going to like win an argument someday. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until today that I realized why I was here. This is what God was preparing us for.
Yeah.
These are the reps like we were putting in. And this is game time. Like this is the moment where you're just in the depths of despair and you realize God's got tools for that. Like he's given, he's equipped you and you know how to use them. Like you've got them at your fingertips and you can break out and sing, "The Lord hear me in troubled times. May Jacob's God defend me and send out strength from Zion." Like you've got that on your lips ready to go, right? Mm-hmm. Be not far off when grief is near. Like you've got those Psalms at your fingertips ready to go. So those are the things I think a man and his wife have to invest in. And if you've done that, like it's not at all about your 401k or about your career status or your title or any of that stuff. It's about, do you have those fundamentals in place where you know who you are? Your wife has got your back entirely. She knows you've got her back entirely. And, your tanks are full, you know, you have fat souls. You're unstoppable at that point. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was our experience. I mean, we tried to start a few businesses. They failed. We ran out of money. We prayed. God brought us opportunities that were totally unexpected. And he kept bringing more opportunities. We kept hustling. And, you know, the rest is, you know, rest is history. But that's a profound and powerful message that I'm certainly trying to teach as many men as I can.
So, you know, for sure, it's powerful how singing psalms, you know, the other side of that is that when your family is singing it together, mm-hmm. and there's mm-hmm. just that whole range of kids' voices, you know, of your wife there is a going out on a limb, because, you know, it's not necessarily something comfortable that a man is comfortable with. Right off the bat, like off the street, right out of public school. Yeah. Heck yeah, I'm going to belt out some psalms. Yeah. Let's do this, guys. You know,
totally.
But requires reps. Coincidentally, also the thing that crushes atheists when they hear that.
That's true. It's very true.
Because I've posted some psalm sing stuff around the table on social media and got some messages from people way back in the past. Like, it's just evidence of the spirit being at work, and they don't necessarily know it, what it is. Right. They know it's something, you know?
Right.
And,
right.
And that's why, you know, during the COVID stuff, the singing at the city hall, you know, and just, so what are you going to do? We're singing. Yeah. Like, how is this, and so that's beautiful, that the reps to get it. We did when I came for the Warriors Tending Garden kind of social, like starting the hymns, passing out the packet, 90 men there. Yeah. Some of them were kind of sideways looking, like they weren't in the normal crowd, I guess. That's right. But it's like,
that's right.
Hey, we're going to do it, you know? Yeah. And so maybe we're getting close to that hour mark, and maybe a prescriptive out of that, that being so critical and so much the foundation that got you through it. A man out there, I've said, move to Southern Pines. If you're thinking Moscow, give Southern Pines a because I feel like there's we're a startup phase here in a sense.
Yes,
and Huntsville too. Like there's just this opportunity. You need people to move into the breach. The infrastructure isn't all there. I think that we're in a similar. I think we had 250 Sunday, but there's at least where you're getting to that point now that you're. Administration isn't, the infrastructure is not there to support the size.
Yeah.
And you need men that are going to do things, functional things for the church out of margin they have with their time because they invested their money. Yeah. And just maybe talk about those guys that are like, I have heard a lot from guys is, hey man, I can't find a church. And I'm like, all right. I get on the website for them. I say, all right, where are you at? Okay, CREC website. Looks like there's one here. That's 30 minutes away. I'm like, bro, you got a church 30 minutes away. That's easy. You know, go check it. Oh, man, it was amazing. It's like, the thing that you said that came out is like, we did our due diligence. Like, we looked, we tried, we committed, we served, and you elected to plant. Because God was calling you, but I'd say maybe just give him a little bit of a flow matrix as a man, You got a wife, yeah. You got kids, things are, and my pastor has said also is a little quick thing is a lot of times it's, you want to do those. If you start trying to do the investment when you're in the dumps, you know, it's not too late because it's never too late.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's hard if you finally have the guts to say, I don't know when you're at your rock bottom. That's
you're not
the you're behind the power curve. Big
time. Yeah, you are. Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, I mean, I have a video on my channel saying, don't plant a church. Here's why you shouldn't plant a church. And, and I'm basically saying if you're somebody who is running on E like you're talking about and desperately needs a church and you don't have a, you don't have the bandwidth, and you don't have the vision, you know, for a church, just go find one. Like go, uproot your family. People uproot their lives and their families for jobs without even batting an eye. I mean, it's like everyone does that. But the idea, and then you hope to find a church wherever you land. And the idea.
Yeah. How crazy, huh?
Yeah. The idea that maybe you'd start with the thing that, that is more essential to your life and to your family, the church, start there and then figure out the job thing next. Like I've seen, I mean, I got a family in our church that showed up from Michigan and this guy had been driving all over the country looking for churches. Mm-hmm. He's a farmer and he's a farmer who's invested his money well and has lived very frugally and is able to have the freedom to figure things out and go without a, you know, a 9-to-5 job for a long period of time. But this dude drove all over the country looking for a church and he landed here and it just come out, you know, without a farm. I mean, dude is a farmer, wants to have a farm, you know, but it's like, there's a lot of pieces. He's a dairy farmer. Like there's a lot of pieces involved, but he and his family took the leap of faith that the church is the first and most important thing and we'll figure out the rest. And he has, I mean, he's been hustling and doing all manner of things and he's providing for his family. It's not comfortable, you know, necessarily, but the message that you're preaching to your children, your wife is like, I care more about you and about your salvation and about your success spiritually. I care about that more than I do about the paycheck. Like I can get a paycheck. I can go get a job at Home Depot. I mean, so this is the other thing is I think guys need to, I know you asked me to make this short. One thing I tell dudes is, imagine the worst case scenario, like actually do the diligence to write out what is the worst case scenario. Like we quit our job and we move to Southern Pines, and I don't have a job. What's the, like actually walk out the absolute worst case scenario. Because I think when you do, like we're more scared of the unknown, than we are of the known. So you make it known by actually going, okay, is there a Home Depot in Southern Pines that is hiring? Okay. I get to Southern Pines. I apply for jobs. I don't get one. The one that I was hoping for, can I go apply at Home Depot and get a job paying $20 an hour or whatever? Can I get an apartment or whatever and take care of my family on that? Yeah, I can. So it's like you sort of let yourself actually play out the worst case scenario so that you realize like, we can deal with that. Like that's actually something we can survive. We can live in a van. Yeah, and, sure. And right.
Well, I did that. I mean, literally was thinking the getting out, you know, I was like, I don't know exactly what it is. I should have done better about planning that out. But I know for a fact I can go to Starbucks as woke as it is. And I can crank out some drinks and I could be the guy that's making it happen. And I actually might have fun talking to some people and that may lead to some other stuff and we're going to be fine. You don't have to work a whole lot to get benefits for this particular company. I knew my sister was a barista, you know, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, I'm a barista.
It's not that bad.
In church every Sunday with my kids. I'm not traveling 8 months a year anymore. There's no pager going off. There's none of this bull crap. I'm present and I'm with family, church family and actual family, and it will be fine.
And when you've got kids, I mean, everyone says this and I know that it's like tired and you're used to hearing it and everyone tunes it out. I'm telling you, man, my son who is going off to college in a few months was a little kid last year. Like he was a little dude, and mm-hmm. and he is now a man heading off to start his own life. That happens so incredibly quickly. Your time is incredibly limited. You've got decades to make your fortune and whatever it is you want to do. You don't have much time to that. While the concrete is wet right now with these kids, you've got to pour it into a solid mold right now, you know, because it's drying. It's drying before your eyes, and you're going to be shocked at how fast that happens. And once it's dry, it's dry. And you're going to, and God's kind, and God, you know, love covers multitude of sins, and God loves his people and isn't looking to just crush you because you screwed up. But really take responsibility for the obligation God's placed on you as the father to provide for your family first and foremost spiritually. So I think that's the thing. Don't be afraid of risk. Be ambitious. Ambition is a good thing. It's a godly thing. And hustle. I don't even remember what your question was now.
I was talking about just what prescriptive kind of to a man. What should I be doing? I think that another thing that I like you talk on taking risk. I think that there's some finesse in taking risk that your wife is not comfortable with.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And there can be this, I was talking on, social media about it. I think I'm probably going to do a standalone podcast in this, but you can't, recognize the state of your family spiritually and then just yank the wheel and be like, we're moving. Like, it can happen in a couple weeks. And, you know, if you haven't been the guy that's been leading well and deserving respect, you can't just say we're moving. I see this problem. We're leaving everything. I'm picking the church. You know, like there is some leadership that needs to happen. But it also, and the way that I feel like it happens in my life in micro situations is I haven't really talk to my wife of how much I've been thinking about this for months.
Yeah, that's right.
Because my mind is, as an entrepreneur, mind's going, I'm thinking about this. Okay, how's this fit with this and this and this and this? And I'm thinking she's tracking with me that I've been planning this for months. And I'm, I'm thinking about it. And she's like, what are you doing? Whoa, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
like,
right.
And I'm like,
I mean,
I haven't actually ever said this out loud.
That's right. God has given you a helper for the work that the mission that he's given you a helper, and you are a huge fool if you are not availing yourself of that priceless resource God's given you. Mm-hmm. And so like I told that story about quitting my job, and it may sound in the story like my wife was just this crazy woman who was like, sure, go for it. We had been in a habit and a practice of sitting down regularly, and not in a structured way, just this is our life. I sit down and talk through the stuff I'm wrestling with at work. And I go, what do you think? Like this thing's going on. This is how I'm handling it. What do you think? And 9 times out of 10, my wife's got a good word for me. Like, have you thought about asking this guy that, Amen. Or have you should ask about that, or, you know, just like, have you over and over. And so what's happened, and this is such a sad thing to see, is for a lot of men, as they get older, they become more specialized in their career, and they're talking their own language, jargon. And this is especially hard in Huntsville. They're all rocket scientists, right? And so it's like your workplace is this like completely different thing. And then like, how do you involve your wife in it? It's a real challenge. But I just would encourage every dude from the very beginning of your marriage, be talking regularly with your spouse, your wife, about your work and strategizing together, you know, because when that moment came where it was like, I know that it's time. I need to leave. My wife was like, I agree. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it. I know. Like, I agree. I can tell. Like,
well, my wife specifically, you know? When you talked about not the vision of what you're not going to do, we had that happen in the military. I was like, that's it. We're getting out. And my wife was like, okay, but I don't want you to be gone 8 months this year with two mortgages, one house being that's ripped apart. I'm pregnant with number four. You know, we just got a $90,000 bonus that we're going to have to pay right back. Like, you know, what's I'm looking at this. What are we going towards if we left right now? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm not going to put you through this year. I'm not going to do this. And she was able to say, hey, babe, like, cause I was very, set on not asking. Cause there's a lot of guys in the military. They'd be like, Uncle Sam says, I got to do this, you know? And sorry. And they just won't tell their boss no, because there is ability to tell your boss no on some things. And, hey, I can't do that trip. And this is, and it's not leadership to say, my wife said no. My boss said, said I had to. Right. Like, you're still in the helm. Right. So I was like hell bent on not doing that to my wife. Like, we're getting out. Yeah. I'm not even asking you to do this. Like, and it was, she was able to kind of be like, hey, I'll be okay. Like, we're going to be fine. We have to have a vision for this. We're not doing it yet. And we did it two years later, you know?
Yeah.
And even then was like, no idea what's going to happen, but there was continual talk. Now I don't give her every, you know, interpersonal, cause she's got, you know, all her kids and things, but
of course
the broad brush strokes for sure. My most trusted business counselor by far, cause she knows me better than anybody else. And she can see through my vanity metric on something.
Yeah, that's
right. And say, you say 3 months, it's probably going to take you nine months to 12 months.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you need to do your planning. What's coming off the plate. Come on, talk me. And I'm like, dang it. You know, you got me again. I
taught her too much.
Yeah,
it's good, man. No, it's good. Well, the thing I kind of remembered also part of your question, which I think is important to mention, is just like, if you're thinking about taking that plunge and finding a church, like getting to a good church, getting your family to a good church. I think one of the metrics or the ways to look at it is like, if you walk into the room and there are a bunch of men who are worshiping God, and who are doing men that you look up to, like men who you're not cringing as you watch them singing, a love song to their boyfriend, Jesus, you know, but like men who you go, I'd like to be friends with that guy. I'd like to be like that guy. You know, I look up to that man, looks like somebody I would respect and follow. Like, if you can walk into a church and see those kinds of men in the room, then that's a place that's worth investigating further. That's probably a really good sign. And that's, you know, when I've done now, you know, many, many membership interviews and one of the, for families joining our church. And that's one of the more common is we walked in and I'd never been to a church with so many men singing. I've never heard that. I've never seen that. Just a bunch of men singing. And that,
there's something,
that was
something about that's powerful.
It is in this day and age. It's powerful no matter what, but especially today, the contrast, when you go from every other church in town that's mostly women leading and it's mostly gay, homoerotic worship songs, that you could easily replace Jesus with my boyfriend and it would play just as well. Dudes don't feel comfortable there. They shouldn't feel comfortable. And the fact that they stay anyway is a sign that they're a little gay themselves. Like, get out of there, man. Like, get out of there. It's bad for your soul, you know.
That, or they've been wife whipped, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That is one way you're behind the power curve, you know, your energy, your responsibility, and so you're just gonna be dead inside and just you know, oh well, this is all I got, you know. If I don't go along with it, if my wife isn't happy with, you know, letting her lead, and then my life's going to be miserable, but then your wife's life's miserable anyway. But we don't even need to open that box up. We don't got time.
You need mentors. I mean, that's true for any and every man in the world. You need mentors. Like, you need men that you look up to and who are models for you of what being a godly man looks like. And so if you're looking around your church and going, I don't see any of those here, that's a sign that you're not somewhere, because your job, your duty for your family is as priest, you know, is to provide spiritually for your family. So that includes you as the leader. Like, is your tank being filled? Like, okay, your wife likes the worship music, your kids like the Sunday school, but are you thriving spiritually? Like, are you mm-hmm. feeling challenged? Are you feeling convicted of your sin every Sunday? You know, are you feeling inspired by God's word to go try harder, work harder, you know, live more faithfully? If not, you know, you should get out of there, man. You need more. Like, you're not going to be able to lead. You're going to get behind the power curve and the plane's going to hit the back of the deck if you don't do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Good stuff, man. Well, I'll get all the links and everything from you after the fact where okay. people can link up with you. I've shared your, Why We Need More Christian Billionaires podcast. That was,
oh, good.
It was a good one I've referenced before. So,
thanks, man. We'll
dig all these links up and point them your way. And after you've checked out Southern Pines and it doesn't meet the criteria, doesn't measure up, and you think that maybe there's a chance a better spot, you guys check out Huntsville, you know. And
you guys have the rugby scene out there. We didn't talk about rugby at all, but the rugby stuff going on out there is pretty special. And talk about a way to build some camaraderie and push yourself physically and regain some testosterone. That's a pretty awesome yeah. Activity for sure.
All right, man. Thanks for the time. And
yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
All right.
God bless.
There you have it. A wisdom-packed, enlightening interview with Larson Hicks. I will link his podcast show in the show notes, and as well as some of the other things that we discussed during the interview. As always, if this provided value to you in a way, benefited you, encouraged you, maybe to get the lead out and get busy, maybe to relocate and find a place that has community, or sparked the desire for you to plant a church where you are and rally other believers to you, be sure to share the show with a friend that would find this encouraging. And don't forget to check out the link for the Renaissance of Men digital conference. Again, the discount code is Spearing, my last name, Spearing. And as always, we put the show notes on our website, spearing.co, with a variety of links to the most popular podcast players. If you're somebody on Apple and your friends on Google, or you don't know if they have a Spotify subscription, whatever, you can copy and paste that link to them on our show notes. Also has everything categorized. You can surf around and kind of find some of the other episodes. If you're new to the show, trying to catch up and figure out what are the things we've talked about, you can sort the podcast episodes by category and deep dive on what we've talked about with respect to family and faith and entrepreneurship and living boldly. So check out our show notes at my website, spearing.co. And as always, have a good one.